Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin on Lending. It is Monday, April 26th, and we have another program packed full of specific information about what is going on, and this may go down as a red-letter day in our industry, April 26th. We've got a big discussion talking about Senate Bill 3217, Restoring America's Financial Stability. We're going to be talking about that in the traffic report, as we referred to it, as the legislative update section. Also, back with us again this week, we have Mitch Keiter with Weiner, Brodsky, Seidman, and Keiter. Good to have you back, Mitch, and we're going to be talking with you in just a minute as we talk more about the Department of Labor's ruling on paying overtime to loan originators. Wow, did we get a lot of feedback last week. I want to also say that we have officially now, we signed the contract, we have Private Mortgage Insurance is now an official sponsor of Lickin' on Lending. We're excited to have them as a sponsor. You're going to be hearing about that more in the shows ahead. We're excited to have them there. And a very special thank you to Ralph Armenta for all that he has done to make that possible. But without further ado, as we do at every program, we're going to start off with a review of what's going on in the markets. Joe Farr, thank you so much for being a part of the program. What's going on today out there, Joe?
Hey, Dave. Hey, we're up this morning so far. Mortgage-backed security prices are up about 5/32nds and over where they ended Friday. Didn't see any real economic reason for that to go other than, there's continuing concern over the debt grease. Greece debt, and the markets are having to pay more to get default insurance against that debt, and it's really pushing the investors to safer, higher quality assets like mortgage-backed securities, at least government U.S. government guaranteed mortgage-backed securities, and not so much treasuries. But anyway, it's really a pretty quiet morning so far. Dave, last week we had a little bit of an increase in mortgage rates. The economic data, which was pretty strong, and I'll get into that in just a minute, but the economic data came in and basically trumped the inflation data. Inflation was very weak, and as you might recall, inflation is low inflation is very good for mortgage rates, but economic data is not because of its opportunity to push mortgage rates higher and inflation higher. But last week for housing data was wonderful, much better than expected. In March, both the existing home sales and the new home sales exceeded expectations. New home sales were up 27% over February. That's the single biggest month increase since 1963. Existing home sales were up as well. They were up 7% over March and 16% over last year at this time, but we all know last year at this time wasn't a very good year. The home buyer tax credit seems to be working, huh?
Yep, that's what I think we're attributing to what's going on here. Yep, absolutely.
We've got a pretty big week ahead this week. We've got Wednesday.
Fed meeting.
Yeah, Wednesday we're going to hear what the Fed's decided, and everyone expects there'll be no change in what they decide about mortgage rate, about Fed funds rate. But what will be pretty curious, I think, is whether they say anything or change their current status or position as it relates to their selling of mortgage-backed securities.
Oh,
you know, they have purchased.
That is going to be big news. That could be a big mover, could it not?
Well, it could. I mean, they're sitting on $1.1 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities, and we all saw what happened when they announced their intent to buy. Mortgage rates fell by about 50 basis points. We all know that they're going to have to, or they want to, begin to sell sometime.
Yeah, that's a bigger news item.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and what has been reported here just recently on Friday that there is a growing belief among Fed board members that they should begin selling probably sooner than what everyone has kind of had in their mind. Bernanke has given signals that he wants to begin selling those maybe sometime next year, but not before next year. Just recently, a good number of the Fed members have expressed a thought that maybe they need to begin selling those in the third or fourth quarter this year. So let's all focus a little bit on that announcement on at 2:15 Eastern time on Wednesday to see what they say, if anything, about that MBS purchase program.
Well, I think it's interesting, though, Joe, that we have 12 Fed voting members favoring beginning to sell. That is that optimism on their part that the markets can handle that? And
well,
you know,
yeah, it's a 6 of the 12 are favoring the sale.
6 of the 12. I missed
yeah,
that. Yeah,
so
thank you.
That's half of them, and that seems to be growing. The thoughts about selling sooner rather than later seem to be increasing. The head guy, though, Bernanke, so far is still in the camp that's not the first thing they're going to do. He's indicated before Congress that he would expect that they would begin to raise interest rates a little bit before they actually begin selling of the mortgage-backed securities. But, you know, you might imagine the impact of adding that much supply on the market. Prices most likely would go down and rates would go up once they do start adding a large amount of supply into the mortgage-backed security market.
Yeah, I think there was an interesting interview that I caught on CNBC where they had the president of Quicken on talking about this very topic and what he anticipates, and they were trying to nail him down on how much of an increase this is going to be, and he did a good job. He says, let's settle in and agree on a half, but it could be as much as a full point, but if I recall his comments there accurately. What else is going on now? We have GDP, a couple other significant items this week.
Well, the first pass at first quarter GDP will be released at Friday at 8:30, and that's usually the more significant of any of the three GDP releases. As you might know, they have the first one in the month following the quarter, and then they have two more revisions. Well, the first one gets most of the attention. So that's going to be announced at 8:30 on Friday. And we also have Treasury auctions. These are the shorter-term Treasury auctions, the 2, the 5, and the 7. And, you know, I would think the greater amount of attention for the mortgage market would be as we get into the 5 and the 7-year terms as being more closely aligned to the mortgage-backed securities. But so big week next week, really, when you think about the Fed meeting announcement or statement and GDP.
That's all this week. That's that is going to be important. And then finding out what goes on. And Joe, how can they find out this? What's the best way out there in the market to be getting all this good information? That's a rhetorical question. I know.
Okay. Well, it's always interesting to watch the market react to economic announcements. And on our service, MBS Quoteline, you can see very, very directly the timing of some announcements. If there's much of a miss, if the expectation of the consensus is missed by much, you can really see the market react to it, and that's kind of interesting. Always, you can see ahead and see when things are scheduled and see when the more significant things are scheduled, so that you can focus on those times. You can kind of prepare your customers for the fact that potential volatility lies ahead, and you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad for what your customers are going to want to see. So it helps to forewarn them.
Yeah, I tell you that. I'm sorry for pulling that on you at the last second there, but folks, I just want to let you know, the MBS Coal Line is a service where you get intraday, I mean several times a day, information, emails, and updates that's going on. I mean, they're brief. You can read in less, usually with 2-3 seconds, you capture what's going on. It keeps you up to date. And then every week, you get a newsletter. If you're a subscriber, you get a newsletter that they'll send out on your behalf, or they send to you, and you can pass on your behalf out to your clients. It just makes you look that more professional. It's a great service. I use it. Especially, I guarantee I'm going to have that on and up there running. It's just dynamic. It's running and bringing live information to you. And I recommend it for all of you. Joe, thank you so much for being a part of this. You, like one listener said, I love Joe's voice because even though there's chaos going on in the market, he has such a soft, soothing voice. So thank you so much. I think they're implying it's a nice contrast to my kind of hyperbole. But anyway, thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back, everybody. And make sure you stay tuned for the whole program to get Mitch Kider on talking about continuing our discussion on the Department of Labor's ruling having to do with paying overtime. And then also later in the program, we've got Andy Schell back by popular demand, talking about that all-exciting topic, accounting. But without further ado, Alice, let's cover what's going on. Alice, would you not say that this week could be, with a vote that's going down potentially in the Senate later today, that this could be a red-letter day for the mortgage industry?
Absolutely it could, as we're trying to watch, as Dave's referencing Senate Bill 3217, Restoring American Financial Stability, and there's supposed to be a procedural vote today, but, you know, it really is just trying to see if, you know, it seems like any time this starts to be talked about in the news today, especially, it's been on several news channels, it was on the news all over the weekend, about trying to get the Democrats and the Republicans together to see what's going to happen with this bill, and of course, they're talking about derivatives and all other aspects of the bill. And then the conversation always seems to then go into, should we allow filibusters in the Senate? And I'm sitting there screaming at my radio going, but wait, we've got to get rid of the 5% risk retention fee. Somebody talk about that. So it's such a small piece within this very large regulation that it's just not getting the press. The compromise in trying to get this thing to a vote is and up on the floor for debate is just centering on all other aspects of the bill right now. So for those of you on this conversation in months past, you know what I'm talking about. To get everybody up to speed, this particular bill has the 5% risk retention in it, where if you are the seller of a security, that you would have to retain 5% of the credit risk on your balance sheet. And there's no corresponding asset with this. You're basically having to carry additional capital to offset this risk. We're trying to get people to pay attention to this as part of like the Mortgage Bankers Association, Mortgage Action Alliance, and Glenn Corso's been on the show a couple of times, so listen to previous broadcasts to get more information on that particular topic. But it is definitely getting lots of attention this week, so we'll be watching that very closely for everyone. The credit risk retention aspect of this legislation leaves it very wide open as to what exactly would the regulator do with this once it's passed. how would it be implemented? Who has to retain 5%? Would there be any exception for good underwriting quality loans? For example, if I met Fannie Freddie guidelines, would we still have to set aside that capital? All of that is all unknown at this point. So I will. Well, I know we can talk about that more in the hot topics as well. For the rest of our legislative update, while all that's going on, this little House Bill 3506 was actually passed the House to eliminate Privacy Notice Confusion Act. I thought it was interesting that, you know, in the day of always adding disclosures, we actually got a bill passed the House to eliminate the need for a lender to send out a privacy notice every year if nothing's changed. That passed the House. We'll watch and see if anything goes on with that. There's also House Bill 4811. This is the FHA Safety and Soundness and Taxpayer Protection Act. This is the bill that would be increasing the upfront, the annual MIP premium on FHA loans up to 1.75. It's also going to expand the HUD Secretary's ability to suspend mortgagees by geographic region. It's going to set a lot of rules in place for FHA, so there's a lot going on with that bill. But there is nothing, but that hasn't had any movement on it yet. So again, that was H.R. 4811. FHA lender approvals, we now had a final bill, a final rule, I'm sorry, and that's going into effect May 30th. We'll be talking about that in our hot topics, the implications in the market that we see anyway regarding the changes with FHA lender approvals. That'll be after our break. A couple other bills in the news that we're watching, just some simple things, nothing extremely dramatic. We are watching to possibly House Bill 4845 to extend VA housing benefits to children of veterans, neighborhood stabilization through short sale. This is House Bill 4826. Creating a one-time tax deduction in some cases as a result if you've had a short sale and otherwise had good credit. Some people like that one, although everybody goes, well, where is that money coming from? And then another, the main pieces that we're watching are the Home Secure Credit changes to Reg Z. I know in our conversation in the next segment, you know, there's loan officer compensation issues already part of this proposed rule and changes in Regulation Z. This proposal is very wide-reaching. We talked about it a lot at the end of last year. The comment period was closed at the end of last year, December of 2009. We are still waiting for the Fed to dissect all those comments and give us some answers on how they may move forward. So the Reg Z Home Secure Credit would be changing ARM disclosures. It would be changing the definition of amount financed and finance charges. And this is that's the one that makes reference to compensation to loan officers, that loan officers could not be compensated based on the term of the loan.
Alice, so any time frame provided at all? Is that likely to are we likely to see final rules in a month,
months? On the Home Secure Credit, there's been a little bit, nothing specific to this bill, but, you know, the compensation issue is out on the sidelines. We have seen a little bit of a discussion going on just related to the ARM disclosures and the finance charge, but nothing substantive. They're not bound by any timelines technically, so it's just on hold at the moment. And the SAFE Act issue for banks and credit unions is also still just in for discussion. There is no final rule on that. As of this time, where credit unions and bank loan officers would have to become registered. We still don't, as of last week, the National Mortgage Licensing Registry was still not set up to be able to handle the bank loan officer registrants.
A question just came in from one of our listeners saying, is there any chances of HVCC, any changes coming down? I think what we reported in one of our earlier programs was that issue is not going anywhere. It is as it is.
That's correct. Fannie and Freddie have issued announcements that they intend to keep HVCC provisions, even though the actual settlement itself will be sunsetting later this year. I know there was legislation in the past that we were watching to put a moratorium on HBCC. And at my fingertips, I don't have them now. We can certainly bring it on to another show. But there has been some data that's come out that HBCC is not the cause of the real estate collapse, as some people would like to say it is. It really has. Yeah, there's a lot of talk about, you know, what HBCC has caused, and that's just not supported yet. So we still see that it's going to stay, especially since FHA's also adopted appraiser independence policies.
Yeah, I think I want to make sure we note that in there. It's an important question that keeps surfacing. It's a frustration for many out there, and I think the silent voice that seems to be somewhat silent is the appraisers, all so frustrated with how this is being handled. Folks, stay tuned. We'll try to bring you information on Senate Bill 3217, as we know. One question just came in, Alice. Is a procedural vote today a vote on the whole bill? I suspect it is not. My understanding, they're actually voting on the bill later. Am I correct?
You know, I'm going to – the vote is due at one point. We thought later today, but, you know, they keep putting that on hold, and so we're just watching it closely to see exactly what is going to be happening later today. There's still room for debate, to begin the debate out on the floor. So I will double-check on that, but I don't believe it's a final vote today.
Okay. So, again, one question keeps coming. When will we know if of a final date? They don't have a final date then to do this, other than based on the news reporting, it could be suggested that this is front and center right now in the Senate, and they're really pushing this through as fast as they can, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good.
And do we have any idea if it does pass today, when will the rules – I mean, you've got a whole need to establish rules, you know, from the regulators as far as what a qualifying loan is or a quality loan is, and who's got to keep the 5%, and do you have to keep it in cash, or can it just be in an obligation? I mean, lots of rules yet to come, even if the bill passes.
Well, they have to even create the entity that's going to regulate it. So, you know, to create the entity and then create the rules that the entity is going to enforce, it'll be a ways off. But.
Well, one thing's for sure, it's a huge issue. The skin in the game, 5% retention is just absolutely could be a game changer for our industry. Folks, we're going to try to get Glenn Corso to be back on next week and or the following week real soon. As soon as we have a significant update, we're going to have Glenn back on and bring it to us. He and his group are front and center, right on the front lines of this battle, and are doing all they can. Encourage you to go over to their website. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. But remember, we have Mitch Kiter and Andy Schell talking to you in this next couple of segments. Important stuff. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Folks, this is an exciting segment. We've got back by popular demand, Mitch Kiter. Mitch is the founding member of Weiner, Brodsky, Seidman, and Kiter. Why is it that every time you pronounce a law firm, you can just get your mouth all tangled up? But bottom line, we are excited to have you back again, Mitch. He is a litigator by trade, but he has extensive client base throughout the industry. He is an expert on all agency, GSC, HUD, VAD, Department of Justice. I mean, Jenny Mae, this guy knows all that's going on. And we're focusing back on the topic we were on last week because we received so many questions. and from all of us. Joe, you received a bunch of questions, and I would love to have you again if you want to amend the introduction here, but I know you know Mitch very well, and I'd like to have you get in and lead this discussion. Take it away, Joe.
Well, I'll say Mitch knows all that is mortgage banking. So if you have an issue.
That's very
Mitch, thank you, and thank you for all that you've done for our companies in the past. So, Mitch, the question about loan officers being paid overtime just seems so bizarre. And there's been a history, and it's a question that's popped up in the past. So just for the new people today and to refresh the people that tuned in last week, what has brought us to the point where this is a question again?
Well, that's a good question, Joe. And, you know, the point of loan officers getting paid minimum wage and overtime is bizarre. It's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole by taking what a loan officer does and trying to fit it under the jurisdiction of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which requires minimum wage and 1.5 times for overtime itself. It's come up again, Joe, because at the end of March, I think it was March 24th, the Department of Labor issued an administrator's interpretive letter. And you may recall, I talked about this last week, in that letter, the Department of Labor effectively wiped out 10 years of Labor Department policy, which was that certain loan officers were exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act if they were paid a minimum salary. I think the minimum salary that was required was $455 per week, and if they fit into the administrative exemption. The administrative exemption itself was something that many companies relied upon in compensating their loan officers and keeping them out of the jurisdiction of the Labor Department's Fair Labor Standards Act.
Mitch, you mentioned certain LOs. Would it be that most LOs that the routine function does the routine function fall under the exempt the administrative exemption?
Well, many LOs that, in fact, worked inside, there's another exemption for outside sales, and those LOs that on a regular and customary basis worked away from their employer may have fit into the outside sales exemption itself. But many LOs that actually have an office, have space, work inside, answer the phone, follow through on leads and things of that sort, may well have fit into the administrative exemption until the issuance of this particular letter, yes.
Well, think about that. So for 10 years, the letter said that administrative exemptions apply to loan originators, and then I believe it was on late March, March 24th or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now they say no. So what does that mean somebody's got to do? Does that mean going forward that the administrative exemption does not apply and loan officers have to be paid overtime going forward?
Well, you know, it's a fact-specific analysis that needs to be done. And my guess is that there are some, although very, very few, loan officers that may still fit within this particular exemption. Most will not. And, yes, it means that you need to look at your policies. This is a big deal out there. For many of our clients, they need to look at their policies and on a going-forward basis recognize that this exemption is not available anymore and change the manner in which they compensate their loan officers as a result of that. So, yes, I mean, there are two questions in what you've just asked, Joe. One is, what do you do on a going-forward basis? And that is you look at your job description, you look at what your loan officer actually does, you see whether or not there are any other exemptions which they fit into other than the administrative exemption. And if not, you, in fact, go ahead and make sure they're paid that minimum wage as well as overtime for the work that they perform. You also need to take a look back and see what type of exposure you may have.
Meaning that even though this interpretation was just announced that you might have to pay overtime for the past 10 years?
Well, no, not for the past 10 years. You know, under the Fair Labor Standards Act, there's a statute of limitations. It's 2 years if a violation was not willful and 3 years if a violation was willful. It's willful if the employer knew or showed reckless disregard for his conduct. So clearly, for those people that relied upon the Department of Labor's policy and position, it's not willful. And furthermore, I will tell you that, you know, there is, under the law, concept of reasonable reliance on the law and interpretations of agencies themselves. So one could argue, and there is an adequate defense in a lawsuit, that in fact they may not be liable on a look back basis because they relied upon the interpretations of the Department of Labor. But having said that, as a litigator, let me tell you, it's very difficult. That's a difficult defense to raise because, number one, you need to show that you actually knew of the former Labor Department interpretations, the specific letters themselves, and that was one in 2001 and one in 2006. So you would have to show that you knew of it and that you took actions in reliance on it, detrimental reliance upon that. And there are all types of other issues that come up along those particular lines. For example, there's a case outstanding in which someone tried to raise that defense, and they said their attorney had informed them of the administrative exemption as a result of those letters, and the court actually held that if you want to put that in and raise that defense, you're going to waive your attorney-client privilege to all matters because you're going to tell us about the communications with your attorney. So there's a lot of nonsense like that that goes on in these types of cases.
Hey, Mitch, I know you've had...
Go ahead. I've got one question that's going to come in. So when you get a break, I've got one that we want to interject that several people are emailing me as we're broadcasting here. So go ahead, Joe.
Well, let's go ahead and do that, then, and then we'll get into sort of what do you do.
Yeah, I think one of the questions that just came in, Mitch, was will this push LO's compensation back to a 1099 basis for conventional production? I know to avoid overtime, a lot of people have moved everyone because of HUD's ruling. To be approved with HUD and so many productions being done that, and that all has to be done on a W-2 basis. Is this going to kind of create the pendulum to swing back to more those that are just doing conventional product going to move back to a 1099 basis?
Well, there's actually a provision in the Fair Labor Standards Act that goes to avoidance, and there's a provision in there that suggests that you would not be able to avoid any having to pay under the FSLA the amounts that are due, that you can't take specific actions to avoid it that way. So I actually think that the industry will have a difficult time switching their loan offices over to payment on a 1099 basis. The Act contemplates businesses trying to get around it along those particular lines. And, historically, mostly as a result of FHA's requirements that your loan officers not be 1099. The industry hasn't been working on a 1099 basis for quite some time now. And so I don't think we're going to see that happen. I think there are a lot of difficulties with that.
Well, there are states as well that don't allow the 1099. I mean, even at the state level, there's –
That's absolutely
really
right.
Good point.
That's absolutely right. Even beyond FHA, certain states say that your loan officers cannot be 1099. That's true.
Mitch, I apologize for interjecting that, but I tell you, you have to see my inbound box. It's loading up with questions on this. I think, Joe, where Joe's going next is really kind of where a lot of these questions are heading, and that's what can we do about this, and what should we do about this?
Well, and let's look at, basically there are three types of exemptions. One is the administrative exemption, which the Department of Labor has just said no longer applies routinely to originators. One's an outside sales guy exemption, and Mitch, can you give us a real quick what is an outside sales guy versus an inside sales guy? How much can a guy be inside and still be an outside sales guy?
Well, there's no specific number or apportionment of the hours, but in order to be an outside salesperson and to fit that exemption, number one, your primary responsibility has to be that of sales. And number two, you have to, on a regular and customary basis, conduct your business away from the employer. And that doesn't mean in an office in your house or in your home. It means really being out there and meeting people in different places all the time and really pounding the pavement, so to speak. So, it'd be very difficult, Joe, to say that it has to be 75% of the time as opposed to 90% of the time. It's almost like pornography in the Supreme Court's definition. If you know it when you see it. Is what the court had to say about it. And it's the same kind of thing over here. Your outside loan officers are the ones that really are outside. They're taking their leads outside. They're knocking on doors. They're getting their business, taking their applications outside as well, which, as we discussed last week, becomes a little more problematic as the SAFE Act begins to be implemented, because a loan officer more and more is not going to be able to take applications outside unless it's out of a licensed location.
Right, and then that brings up the next question, or the next exemption is the exemption for professionals, which you mentioned last week may be a defense for the industry to keep from having to pay loan officers overtime or to not make them eligible for overtime as being something that could happen in the future. So can you explain real quickly what the professional exemption is, what we might need to do as an industry to get there?
Sure, sure. What we have to make clear up front is that it's not an exemption that's available today for companies. It's just not there. What I refer to as the professional exemption, some people refer to as the series of exemptions that deal with the white-collar exemptions. There are a number of different things that come into play. There's an exemption for learned professions and sciences. There are specific exemptions for teachers, some computer scientists, doctors, lawyers, things along those particular lines. Those are the exemptions that we look at. They don't exist today. It does not exist today for loan officers. But the reality is loan officer is a professional, and it's being evidenced even more so as a result of the SAFE Act requirements that will require a certain amount of experience, basically good credit as well, background checks. But even more importantly, for an exemption of this type, it's going to require education upfront, pre-licensing, and continuing education on an annual basis. What the industry really, I think, is going to need to do is go back to the Department of Labor after the SAFE Act is fully implemented across the board and say, look, this is what a loan officer does. Rather than try to fit the square peg into this round hole over here, let's acknowledge what they do. Let's acknowledge the historical manner in which they get compensated, and let's look at them as the professionals that they are, as now required by federal law and by state law, as a result of all these additional requirements placed upon them. That's what needs to be done. The Department of Labor is the department that interprets the Fair Labor Standards Act. It is the department that creates specific exemptions under their regulatory authority. And I think that what we're headed towards is a different type of loan officer as a result of the SAFE Act, education-wise. And a visit with the Department of Labor when the time comes to see if we can get that specific exemption as a professional.
Well, if that's going to work, is it going to work in 3 months, or is it going to work in, you know, this year, or is it going to – and what do we do in the meantime?
Well, the practical answer to your question is no, it's not going to work this year. I mean, first of all, I don't think you'd have the conversation with them until the SAFE Act is fully implemented, and for many that's not going to be until at least after July or the end of July of this particular year. And then you would go to the Department of Labor and make this specific request, and the Department of Labor may suggest that they'd have to go through rulemaking to get it done. So no, you're not talking about this getting done and accomplished during 2010, and you'd be very lucky if you had it accomplished during 2011 as well. In the meantime, it's a really good question. In the meantime, if you don't fit into a specific exemption, and most loan officers will not fit into specific exemptions that exist today, companies need to take a look at their policies and procedures, change them, and apply minimum wage and overtime requirements to their loan officers, and come up with some very detailed policies defining what the work hours are, when someone is working overtime, and things along those particular lines. Clients are very, very busy doing that today. We're spending an awful lot of time with our clients on this very issue.
So,
can you take a good look at last year? I mean, can you take a representative sampling of the business that you did last year and do an analysis? And would something like that hold up if you got to the point and you said, hey, here's this group that was fairly compensated under format?
You wouldn't come up with an analysis that suggested here's a group that was fairly compensated. You will, in fact, have to take a look at what occurred last year and help you make a determination as to what overtime should be. I mean, ultimately, in determining a calculation for overtime, you need to come up with an hourly wage. And you come up with an hourly wage by looking at the loan officer's compensation. Generally, you take a look back and you look at last year's compensation for that particular loan officer. You divide it by a 40-hour work week across the board for an entire year, come up with an hourly amount, and that would be the amount that you would have to pay time and a half of overtime for that particular loan officer.
But
you know
what hours, Mitch?
Could you hold that just one quick session?
Okay.
Last question. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word and continue this important topic with Mitch Kider. Thank you, Mitch.
Stay tuned.
We'll be right back.
Quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Schrott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Schrott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Schrott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Schrott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Schrott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Schrott, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Folks, we are fortunate to have Mitch Kider. And Mitch, last week, one of the emails I got in is, boy, am I glad you have Mitch on the program. You're saving me legal dollars. We're a client of his. He is brilliant. He does a great job. And you put, yuck, yuck, don't tell this to Mitch. I'm going to still keep him retained and work with him. But, Mitch, we do thank you very much for being here and talking to us about this issue. You will not believe how many people are tuned in and listening this week. It is overwhelming. And for those folks, we got a lot of emails that came in saying, how can we learn more? I'll tell you, go to www.bsam.us, and you're going to go to their website, go to people, and you can click on there and see Mitch's good face of smiling face as he's sitting there with his reading glasses on looking at us. With you look like you're just really researching this very issue. So it almost could be just like that could be an animated photo of you, Mitch. But welcome back, and we thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. .com, by the way, WBSK.com.
Oh, .com. Okay, I'm looking at the link I have in here, and it was another one. And anyway, thanks for correcting that. And also, while we're there on that topic, what's the number they can reach you at?
They can reach me at 202-628-2000. And
good.
Feel free to call. This is a big issue. This is very problematic in this particular industry right now, and it's something you need to get your arms around quickly to avoid any further exposure.
I tell you, this discussion should have everyone's ears perked. Go ahead, Joe.
I know that there are lots of people running mortgage companies out there just shaking their head right now and saying, how on earth do we do this? This is just so foreign to the concept of what an LO is and does. Logistically, the idea of having to keep up with hours worked, you have to assume that someone shows up and leaves and doesn't work after he goes home. I mean, that's just not what an LO does. And how do people measure that, Mitch? How do they say this is when he's working and this is when he's not?
Through specific policies that they need to draft and address it, Joe. It's very tough. It's not at all something that comes natural to the mortgage banking industry. It's not the manner in which a loan officer works, in all honesty. But it is the law of the day. And so the reality is what lenders need to do is take a look at their policies and define what the workday looks like. What the Fair Labor Standard Act says is, there are 7 consecutive days, you have 168 hours. You determine a 40-hour work week off of those 168 hours. The Fair Labor Standard Act doesn't really care if you're working 10 hours one day and maybe 6 hours another day or something else along those lines. It cares about a 40-hour work week. I will tell you, though, lenders need to be careful because many states have more restrictive laws and they're not preempted by the Fair Labor Standard Act if they're more restrictive. So California, for example, wants you to work an 8-hour day and no more than an 8-hour day before overtime compensation kicks in along those lines. But what they need to do is define when you're working and where you're working and what constitutes working. It's a tough statute because the manner in which it reads is if you suffer or permit someone to work overtime, you have to pay for it. So if they're working overtime, you have to pay them for it. which is why policies and procedures are really important. I'll give you a classic example, Joe. It's something that you and I had spoken about. You know, what if I'm going to my kid's Little League game? I'm a loan officer, and I go to my kid's Little League game. You know, if I'm a good loan officer, I'm always working. That's the absolute truth of the matter. And I'm telling people what I do, and I'm collecting information, and I'm handing out cards and doing things along those lines. Am I working? Is that overtime, or is that not overtime? And you really have to define those types of things. And really, I mean, you know, if you're going to a Little League game, not necessarily your own kids, but if you're going to a meeting for the specific purpose of furthering your work and getting leads and talking to people about your company, you're going to define that as something that you're doing is working. If you happen to be out there in a recreational setting enjoying yourself and you do what any good business person does and you hand out a couple of cards here and there and you talk to a couple of people and it just comes up in conversation, but that's not your primary purpose for being there, you want to define something like that as not being part of the work day. But
wow.
You need to be specific in the manner in which you define it yourself. It's going to differ by company based on the procedures that you set up.
Just one last quick question, Mitch. And have you seen companies implement this policy, and have you gained a sense of reactions within that company as to change in procedures, change in compensations, change in percent splits, any reaction inside a company?
Sure, across the board. I have seen companies implement these policies because they've been forced to as a result of much litigation that's out there, quite frankly. There have been some favorable changes as a result of it and some very unfavorable changes as a result of it. Number one, a company is much less tolerant of a non-producing loan officer under these particular policies because they're paying for someone that's ultimately not bringing loans in the door itself. So whereas you may have found loan officers that were not producing very well staying on because they were solely working on a commission basis, you find that companies that understand this new process are not quite as tolerant. And they're weeding out people as a result of that because it goes to the amount that they have to pay out. Number two, I've seen wholesale changes, quite frankly, to the culture of companies. I've seen companies where vibrant companies where loan officers would follow up on telephone leads, internet leads, and other things along those particular lines and work all hours of day or night. Now I've seen those offices empty at 6 o'clock. In the afternoon, which has a great impact on business itself.
All the calls come in.
That's exactly right. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, if you do this right, you can define your hours as being later hours as well, which is why it's important to make sure that you do it right and you set the right procedures that work for your company. I've seen loan officers, for the most part, good loan officers, producing loan officers, that are unhappy with this. They consider themselves professionals. They want to make a good living out there, and they see this as being somewhat restrictive, and I agree with that particular analysis. So I've seen a lot of changes in the companies that are forced to go through this.
Mitch, we've got emails and texts is coming at me with questions. I want to get to two questions real quick. We've just got a couple minutes before we have to go to another segment. But one of the questions that came in, it says, we have an LO who is a stay-at-home mom and only works a few hours a day. Can an LO be part-time and not receive overtime?
Here's your issue. You're going to define this LO's work week as a part-time employee. And so if the question is, can this be a part-time employee, but then within my defined work week go beyond those hours themselves, your answer is going to be that you're going to owe this individual overtime if she goes beyond your defined work week for her. You're compensating her. For example, you may have a part-time LO that has a 20-hour work week, and now she's working 30 hours a week. You're either going to change her particular status, or you're going to have an individual that's going beyond what you've set up for her.
Yeah, you know what? There are so many questions we could get to. We're being inundated. One last one from a business owner. I'm nervous, Dave, because I hear that there's a statute of up to 2 years and that this law has been existing. Do I have to worry about litigation coming at me from disgruntled old employees that are unemployed right now that didn't do well? Is this opening the door for just a bunch of more activity? This plus the what's going on with the skin in the game, it just – I'm worried, Dave. Any thoughts to this individual who's a business owner?
Well, no, I have some thoughts for this individual. I think first and foremost you deal with what you can today, and that is you set your procedures correctly on a going forward basis. That's the best thing that you can do for yourself and for your company and to give yourself some peace of mind on a going forward basis. In terms of whether or not this is going to bring about more litigation as opposed to less, the reality is most major-sized lenders, most of the larger lenders and many of small, mid-sized and smaller lenders have already been sued under the Fair Labor Standards Act on behalf of loan officers as well as their other employees. And that litigation is going to continue, and some of it's going to continue even more so as a result of this administrative exemption no longer being available. But I will say this. The letter just came out at the end of March. What's important to do is to change your policies and procedures, recognize it, fix it on a going forward basis. And you may, you may or you may not get brought into a lawsuit looking backwards. But if you do, the argument is going to be that you relied upon a law that existed. It's a difficult argument, but it's one that can be made. And courts may not place all that much weight or credence upon what the Department of Labor has done. Many courts will, but some may not, just because of the manner in which they changed so suddenly a 10-year policy. So I'm a person. I litigate for a living, as Joe can tell you and my other clients. So my job is to keep mortgage bankers out of trouble, and I enjoy doing that. And I think what you do is you fix your problem on a going forward basis, and you
great
let
advice.
People like me take care of it otherwise.
That's great advice. And, folks, I tell you, the way to get a hold of Mitch again is by calling his direct line or his office number, I guess is probably the best way. Would you give everyone that phone number again, Mitch?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's 202-628-2000.
2000, very good. And the website again is the initials for the law firm, Weiner, Brodsky, Seidman & Kiter, which again, WBSK.com. Am I correct on that?
That's absolutely right. Or you can email me directly at Kiter, K-I-D-E-R, at WBSK.com.
Mitch is the best.
Mitch, I'm glad to hear it. Joe can attest to it. He knows the and Joe, thank you so much for asking Mitch to come on. The feedback, Mitch, is overwhelming. I'll tell you, we'd like to have you back on a regular basis. Would you be willing to do so?
Absolutely. We can talk about it when we're offline. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'd love to have you come back. The point of it, if you see anything going on out there, any developments on this, we've had said, please have Mitch come on. Keep us posted. They are loving this segment. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Andy Schell talking about accounting. And there's some really good information here, folks. Don't miss this.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions, or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Folks, this is Dave Licken. We're back with Licken on Lending, and we're live. And we have Andy Schell, who's my business partner, and he's been a part of MBS since we formed it. He's a CPA, CMB, and a CFF. Andy, what the heck is a CFF? What's those initials stand for?
Well, hi, Dave. Thank you very much. Wow, what an amazing segment that was with Mitch. Goodness, it's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me. A CFF means Certification in Financial Forensics. It's kind of like You can get board certified in internal medicine if you're a doctor. Well, a CFF is a certification in financial forensics for an accountant, and it's issued by the AICPA. And basically what it means is that I'm certified to deconstruct the past, looking at financial records, interpret the present, and predict the future. And that's really important when you're looking at a company, because we can go into any accounting situation and create reports, create financial reports, so that the company can know both where they've been, how much they're making today, and where they're going. Very, very important topic, very important issues, including knowing their profit per loan and even getting into the implementation of mark-to-market activity.
Oh, Andy, this is Alice. You know, we keep talking about accounting. Tell everybody why accounting is so important.
Well, thanks, Alice. You know, the topic Mitch was just discussing brought up overtime cost that a business could incur, and that's a business risk. That's a business risk that is surfacing as a result of a regulatory change. Well, the accounting department should be all over this. They should already be thinking through the next step, how to address it, what are they going to do about it, because accounting should be looking at two really key important things, and that is helping the owners really understand and have accurate information about the financial condition of their company. Oh, and by the way, for all the business owners out there, it's April the 26th. You should have had your financials last week. Be sure and go over them with all your team. Make sure everybody understands the results for March. And this is the other really important point. Accounting helps protect the assets of the business and limits the risk within a business. And now this includes corporate fraud. This includes regulatory risks resulting from changes in the laws. So protecting the assets is really, really important. And one of the first things to think about in protecting assets is preserving profitability. Without profitability, you're going to be eroding assets, because losses have to get covered with cash. So you're going to be using cash to cover losses. You're going to be liquidating assets to cover losses. So keeping the company profitable is one of the most important focuses of the accounting department. Anytime it looks like there's a loss, accounting should be all over that. They're the first to know about it, and they should come up with five or six solutions, presenting those to management immediately so they know exactly what's happening and how to fix it. Now, also included in this is there's protection of the assets includes protecting the assets and the cash. And protecting the cash really is about having dual signatures on checks, having dual control over wires, having a well-structured expense approval process. And I want to mention about that dual control over wires. Dave and I worked on an account for a big lender where the accountant was wiring money out to their personal account, stole millions of dollars, and nobody knew anything about it. And all this happened because they didn't have appropriate controls in place. It's really, really sad, the lack of attention accounting gets. People assume that accounting is a department you put in the basement, you give them a bunch of metal desks, you turn the lights down. And that's really not the right focus. Accounting can protect the business and keep it on track. One quick point about obligations and risks, and I know I've got 2 minutes left, so I'll go fast. All of the net branches, net branch managers are an employee of the home office. But as a branch manager, they often have implied authority. And this implied authority as a branch manager means they could sign a lease for a copier in the name of the home office, and then that branch could go away, but the home office is going to be left with a little obligation the branch manager signed. So it's really important to have control over lease liabilities. It's important to have a forecast. Important to know your cash forecasting and how much money you're going to need next month. If you're going to go on a cruise in November, you're going to start saving now to make sure you have enough money. Same thing with mortgage. If you're going to have funding volume increase next month, you need to know you have the money to do that.
That is such a good point, and we've got just so little time left. We got literally less than 1 minute remaining. I know there's more questions we're going to get into. For listeners, we got so much feedback after having Andy on last week, and I thank you so much for it. almost unanimous. Everyone says, yeah, make this a regular segment. We're going to have Andy on again. Next week we'll be talking about financial forecasts. Is it really worth the effort? That's one of the things we're going to lead off with next week. Stay tuned. It's so important to know where you're going, where you've been. Folks, we thank you so much for being a part of this program each week. We appreciate you making a part this a part of your career and staying informed on what's going on. A special thank you again goes out to PMI for joining us as a sponsor. You're going to be hearing a lot more about that in programs ahead. Thank you, Joe and Alice. And Mitch Heider, we thank you so much for answering so many questions. Of course, Andy, we'll look forward to having you back next week talking about this important topic. Everyone, have a great week. Hope to have you back next week. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.